Laura Grover had never lived in the Midwest, and Bloomington, Indiana seemed like a world away from her home in Maine. When she got here, she was lonely, landlocked, and in need of an artistic outlet. So she started telling stories.
Well, I mean, storytelling is something everyone does every day. I mean, it's a very human way of interacting with others. We're constantly telling stories, even ones that aren't extraordinary. I mean, just when you get home from work and talk about your day with, like, a loved one. Like, I think it just really reaches across all walks of life because everyone has stories. I mean, there's nothing specific that you need to go to school for or be trained in to have a life worth telling stories about.
Organized live storytelling performances may be new to Bloomington, but they've been happening in big cities for years. Grover got hooked to the idea by listening to broadcasts of these events on her portable player while she worked a desk job in the fall of 2008. Programs like This American Life, Radiolab, and especially The Moth, which is a live storytelling podcast out of New York City, Chicago, and Los Angeles.
I was listening to those constantly, and I was feeling so inspired at the end of the day, even though I was doing this mindless work. I was just really passionate about it, and just I'd go back home and talk about all of these things I'd listened to. And so I was like, oh man, it'd be so great if I could get something like The Moth in Bloomington, and I wonder if it would work.
1 year and four events into this project, and yes, the storytelling project seems to work really well in Bloomington. People of all ages and all walks of life have participated, turning their everyday stories into performances.
I think the idea is so simple that it comes really naturally to people, even people with no, like, onstage abilities. Like, I myself have incredible stage fright and have told a story at one of my events, and it's like something that happens where if you have a story that you've told to a group of friends and you've told it enough times that it becomes so fluid because it's so much an extension of yourself, it's easy to project that. So I sort of sat down and wrote out like a journal entry of what I was going to, like, of what the event was that I was talking about. The story I was telling had to do with panic. I'm sort of a nervous person. Panic and travel, and how I once preemptively jumped off of a train, and I was in the middle of Italy, like in the middle of nowhere, having jumped off this train like way early. So I wrote about the experience and tried to, like, remember, like, okay, what was that like? What did I feel like? What was my traveling companion thinking at this point? And then I just sort of pretended I was telling it to, like, an old friend. It comes really easily in that way. And that's sort of the atmosphere that I'm hoping to create. Like, a community is just a bunch of, like, friends that you haven't met, you know, kindred spirits. And it's nice to see people connecting who have no idea, like, what the other person is like beyond that moment.
The next event by the Bloomington Storytelling Project is taking place on Saturday, June 19th at 7 p.m. at The Bishop. If you're interested in telling a story at an upcoming event, or if you want to find out more about the programs that inspired Laura Grover, it's all on our website, wfiu.org/artworks. Here's a live performance by Abby Mack from the second storytelling event in Bloomington. She told her story, Miscommunications at the Bishop, in October of 2009.
All right, so I'm actually not sure exactly that my story is about miscommunication per se. But I was really excited to tell a story here tonight, and my brain was sort of rifling through my memory files, and I was like, you know, pulling out stories and, like, throwing them to the side, and I didn't know what to do, so I went home to my mom's, and my family was sitting around. It was dinner time, and I told them about the Storytellers project, and immediately, without skipping a beat, everyone starts telling a story, you know. So at first, I'm, like, kind of taking notes and nodding, and then as the stories progress and people are telling stories about their third grade gym teacher and, you know, you know, the high school diva, and, you know, everyone's fainting and punching the air, and you know, the memory guys in my brain are, like, just putting things through the shredder, and they've hit the panic button, and I have no idea what I'm going to talk about, and it hits me, this sort of, like, idea about frustrating moments when you're trying to communicate your story. And I remember this story about my little brother, Sam. And Sam had this amazing speech impediment when he was little. And we're from Indiana, you know, but for some reason everyone thought we were from Boston. And somehow Sam was the only one who retained the accent. He said all his R's like this eh sound, you know, pack the care. And girls were gays. And no one could understand what he was saying, ever. And so one day, my mom's in the kitchen, and she's washing the dishes, and Sam comes running in, and he's completely panicked, and he's just been playing with his friend Annie, and he says, "Ma! Ma! Annie peed on Banny!" And my mom's like, "Oh, no!" You know, three things. Annie peed on something. It's something named Banny. There might be a kid named Banny at the house that I didn't know about. And so she turns around and she looks at Sam and she's like, "Banny? Banny, yeah." And Sam's just, you know, pacing and he's panicked and he says, "Banny, Ma, Banny." And she gets down and she, to, you know, read his lips, she bends over to look closer at, you know, Sam, who's three. And he looks at her and he holds her by the cheeks and he says, "Banny, the papal dynasty." And she realizes Banny, the papal dynasty, is Barney, the purple dinosaur, Sam's favorite stuffed animal. And he's just in tears right now, so frustrated because, you know, Benny's been peed on. And just like, I thought about that moment so much, that just complete, like, "Oh, I want to tell you something." And this happened to my brother a lot throughout his childhood. For Halloween, my mom that same year asked him what costume he wanted to be, and he said, "A Kelican." And, you know, she said, you know, same scenario almost exactly. And he grabs her this time by the shirt and he says, "Bones, Ma, bones." The skeleton, you know, like, he's just trying so hard. And this is kind of like just a characteristic of my family, by and large, to get a message across, you need a big motion and a good sound. And this is just the key, you know. Sam is got this perfect accent that everyone in my family knows how to do, and nobody else knows how to do. You can't, don't even try. Like, if you're not in my family, you can't do it. You can try a little eh. If you can get the nasal, you might be able to. And anyway, we all communicate this way. We all tell these stories, these big gestures, these big voices, and it's almost never a moment where we say anything directly. It's all very circuitous and frustrated and dramatic. So I, back to the other night when I was watching them all tell their stories and I was thinking about Sam and his frustration. I also thought about my oldest sister and her moment of perfect clarity, probably the only simple story that we have in my family, the only moment when someone was exactly direct and said what needed to be said when it needed to be said. So I'm going to tell this story about my sister. Basically, my mom was pregnant for the first time with Anna, and she had this romantic idea that someone in the world would actually love her singing voice because nobody. I mean, it's endearing. They love it. But my mom sounds kind of like Ethel Merman when she's trying to sing. And it's like, wah, 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 wah. You know, never hits a note. And just terrible. So the entire time, I love my mom. The entire time she's pregnant, she's singing to this baby. You know, all through Anna's infancy, she's singing. finally they're in the car, and Anna's about a year old, and she's buckled in, and she's got her hat on. She's real chubby, and it was a real tub of goo. And my mom is like looking in the rearview mirror and driving and singing to her and just like loving it and looking at Anna, loving it. And until this moment, Anna had never said a complete sentence, only just little mama, dada. And Anna just, my mom pauses in her singing for a moment and looks back at Anna, waiting for some reaction. And Anna looks at my mom and says, "Don't sing." It's her first sentence. And she's been waiting a year to say it. And it stands in history as the bookmark of our entire family's absolute moment of clarity. And that's the end of my story.